down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, welcome.
Hello, good morning. I would like to tell you about an incident that happened on Monday or Tuesday. It was about minutes to five in a call town bus in a Cheapside, down by Cheapside. Right?
Yeah.
It first started when a lady got in the bus, a young lady. She stepped back out. She said, "Look at that man." And then she called another lady. The other lady went in. She got back out quickly. Right? Then the bus driver said, "Everybody get out this bus." A young bus driver. "Everybody get out this bus." So about half the people got out. And then the elderly gentleman, he was about 80, got out. His feet were swollen like if you had elephantitis. And his skin was rough. And he had an odor coming from the feet, right? After he got out, the bus pulled off with half the people in it. I went around to the supervisors, where the supervisors are, right? The bus then came back. The passengers that were put off started to get back on the bus. The elderly gentleman tried to get in the bus, and the bus driver shut the door quick, right? And then opened it. The other people rushed past the old man. The old man now tried to get back on the bus. The supervisor came running out of the crowd. That time the bus stand was really full. Shut the door. Don't let get on our bus. Don't let get on our bus. And she had two guards behind her. The man could hardly, while he was walking, look out. He couldn't even stand up properly. And he had a cane. All right. Everybody got on the bus, left the elderly gentleman there. Another bus came, Spicetown bus. He got up to go to the bus door again. Again, the supervisor ran through the crowd. Don't open that bus door.
He never got a bus?
He never got a bus.
You know how he got home?
I don't know. I did my part. I went and called I didn't know what to do. I went and called the police. Right? Because here's an elderly gentleman. I mean, like, we need to treat. There is a way to treat people. Another incident, I saw another elderly gentleman. He went to the bathroom. So he passed water. You know, sometimes you get a little incontinent. So he had a little wetness on the front of his pants. And he was going to get in the bus. And the bus driver said, "You can't get here," so that kind of rough way. I mean, we're dealing with elderly people. You don't know what will happen to you later on in life. You understand?
And I think that the real difficulty that they face is that if the person is on the bus and it is creating a significant inconvenience for other passengers, then they have a difficulty trying to cope with it. And I don't know if the transport board has any real protocols for dealing with situations such as these. But, I see both sides of this issue. I agree with you. But ultimately, you want to treat the elderly and the infirm with a certain degree of dignity. And certainly having an elderly man scramble for a bus and have two buses leave him at the bus terminal, that certainly is not the way to treat him. Some alternative approach that the transport board may be able to invoke to get him home.
But the supervisor even running through the bus stand, "Don't get in our bus, don't get," and everybody like looking at him.
Chances are this is not the first time they've encountered that man, huh? Chances are. So I think what we are putting on the table here is what is it that the transport board can do in those circumstances to help out people who are under that kind of pressure. I mean, sometimes you may find yourself having to have a relationship with, let's say, a private contractor or somebody like that, who can be used in those circumstances. But I don't know that I've ever heard that they've gone that far. There are many instances, though, where elderly people, and in particular elderly men in Barbados, carry themselves in such a state that it becomes difficult for people who are sitting next to them or close to them. And as much as we talk, we're not going to be able to stop that. It will happen, so you have to find some method by which you can deal with it, okay?
But it is very concerned that the words will run through the bus tower with two big guards behind, like if you're going to hold a man. I mean, like,
you're putting too much focus on the supervisor. The issue is...
There's a way of dealing with things.
Yes, I agree with that. But I think you need to look at how the system is structured to deal with the problem rather than just looking at the individual. That individual could have handled it better, but I think, you know, you need to... That's as much as I can say. What time was it?
That was like minutes to 5 o'clock in the evening.
Rush hour.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for calling about it and airing the concern. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Good morning to you and your guest there.
Good morning,
first of all, I want to really pay compliments to the public officers that are in the studio, because they are really a credit to the public service, and it shows that the public service has the technical capacity within its ranks. And I want to compliment the young people there in the studio this morning. Now, the other thing I really want to deal with too, Mr. Ellis, is a caller before dealt with the question of tanks. Now, I want to add, there are two matters I want to deal with this morning, if you will give me permission. The first thing is with on the properties that were examined on the South Coast at the U.S. Embassy. Were there tanks on those properties, officers?
We don't know. We can't say because we haven't had access to those properties. Once we get access to those properties, we will know.
But were the tests done at the original source or from the tanks?
I don't know. We don't know if they had tanks.
But that is critical. But don't you think that is critical?
Once we get access to the properties and they have agreed, we will know, and we will then have the comparative analysis that we can do.
So right now you don't know if they're from the primary source or from the tanks?
Right. We can't answer that right now.
But that puts a different complexion on the whole situation, don't you think? Anyway, I'm not going to put you in that kind of predicament. But Miss Alice,
yes, sir.
I want to deal with just quickly, because I know your program is mainly about the water quality. But won't you agree?
It's
with
not
me
exclusively that, about it, though.
Okay, mm-hmm. But don't you agree with me that out of the central bank governor's report, that there were more negatives than positives?
I can't say that. What struck me most of all was the fact that the deficit had come down and that there was growth. But then on the other side of the coin, you had the foreign reserves falling further. So I thought it was a mixed report, but the concern about the falling foreign reserves kind of outweighed the pluses that were highlighted. That's what I would say.
But I am glad that you did not fall for my trap.
I know you well.
Because I can tell you something, there were absolutely more positives than negatives. I mean, the economy grew by 1%, Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
The fiscal deficit fell by...
But I just told you all of that. But I also told you foreign reserves were another 6.6 months...
But
weeks of import.
But I agree with that. That is very critical. But these things that I'm going to list for you are going to eclipse that.
Well, they will, in your view.
Let me tell you. The fiscal deficit fell by $197 million, mister. The lowest in 7 years. The tourism expanded by 1.2%. The banking system remains stable. And especially this one. Nobody is talking about this. Everybody lampooned the government all over the last year or two, or even longer, that they were borrowing excessively from the central bank. Now, lo and behold, the governor has said very clearly that the funding the government fell to 96.8 million compared
The 700.
Because the government coerced the commercial banking sector to make more money available to it, even when it saying that it is putting the depositors' money at risk. That's
that
the other side of
so.
That.
That is not so.
That's the you know, for everything that we can present, there's always another perspective on it.
But the perspective has to be cloaked in honesty and truth.
That's it. Well, those are the facts as given. Those are the facts as given even by the governor of the central bank.
But
you know full well. But you, and but the price that we pay for all of this is that the commercial banks are a law unto themselves, charging people for any and everything under the sun so that they can report to their shareholders that they have made a bigger profit. So the climate that has been created by the macroeconomic picture, ultimately, it is the average customer who's paying for that.
But I don't know where you're going with that. I want to tell you this, though, that the last year, around the same time, the corresponding period, the commercial banks loaned the government $240 million. This year, they went up by $50 million to $298 million that the government had to borrow from commercial banks. Look at the significant drop from $714.5 million down to $96.8 million. Do you think that is commendable?
Well, boy, it is commendable on the one hand, but it is concerning on the other. And you know what? I'm going to say that I invite your comment on. I'm particularly concerned about what will happen after the elections if the government seeks to be involved in a stimulus aimed at trying to win the elections through that stimulus. Because the very foreign reserves that you talk about will be significantly depleted, and nobody in Barbados expects that the government is going to resist the urge to be involved in an election stimulus program. Now, you respond to that.
I don't know. I have been watching this government for the last 10 years, and I have seen no irresponsibility on their part when it comes to expenditure.
I never use the term irresponsibility. You
well,
are
if,
using that.
If you are going to enter a stimulus package, you're looking at wanton spending.
You heard the Prime Minister last night. The Prime Minister said last night that he completely rejects the idea of putting the people, the workers on the breadline. Fine. It sounds really good. Very altruistic and genuine and stuff. But what is missing is the alternative plan for dealing with the negative aspects associated with trying to keep the people employed. So you can't just keep people employed just so. It's unsustainable. Everybody knows that. And this is, because it's you, I'm going to put to you a position, hoping that you can give me the counter, because I know you're quite capable of doing this. Prior to the last elections, the government said there were going to be no layoffs. They won the elections, and immediately thereafter, 3,000 people went home. And this sounds like a repeat of that. How do you see it?
First of all, if you present an argument and the premise on which the argument is built is flawed, the whole argument falls flat on its face.
True.
Now, you just presented an argument that said that 3,000 public officers were sent home. Now, that statistic alone is fraught with inaccuracy.
Tell me, what is the truth? When you put Beautify Barbados together and the NCC together, tell me what was the truth.
Just about 1,800 public officers went home. They're public officers around your table there.
Some of them shaking their head in the negative to what you just said.
That there were more than 1,800 people who
yes.
went home?
Yes.
But this is amazing.
So, anyhow. Don't worry about it. Listen, I thought that statistic was quite well known across Barbados. But of course, if you say to me, look, the truth is that it wasn't only public officers who went home as a consequence. People in the private sector were also impacted too.
I didn't live in the private sector, man.
Of course not. Of course not. Of course not.
A previous caller this morning said 6,000. The unions are saying 6,000.
I ain't know 6,000.
You have moderated it down to 3,000.
No, I didn't hear anybody else. I will never go up there in a 6,000. That's outrageous.
You know what 3,000 public officers going home would do to the public service? Come on, man.
Public officers do not mean just civil servants. When you talk about public service, you're talking also about statutory corporations. Do you know that full well?
Nowhere near anything.
This issue will confront any administration after the elections. We are in a situation where we are getting less revenue. The expenditure is higher than the revenue. And in those circumstances, it is not sustainable. No, what didn't come up last night, but is certainly lurking around the corner, everybody knows that it hovers around above our heads, is how are you going to get some assistance in addressing the problem? And going to the IMF, I see some comments which were made, reportedly made by the Minister of Finance, trying to give the impression that finally the government is considering going to the IMF because the country wants it. It's not the government that wants it or the government that recognizes that it has to be done. When I want to pressure the government into going to the IMF, well, I give it what I want. Basically, that's what I saw. So that's our reality. We just can't continue this way. And after the elections, you are going to feel the full blast of this. One way or the other. That's our reality. This is down to brass tacks. Sacks, welcome to the program. Don't forget that we got Gail Trotman, Steve Daniel, Alex Eiffel, and Anthony Headley here to talk water quality as well. So if there's anything that you have in mind there, please don't be afraid to raise it. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Good morning. It's still morning. It's 18 minutes after 11 o'clock.
Yeah. Good morning to you and your esteemed technologists, some of the bright people we got in this country. I have a question for them, however. First, before you ask the question, let me tell them that I like to wash my hand clean and go with my pipe and brush my belly with water. So the Americans could talk wherever they want to talk. I drink heavy water until the people in your studio tell me don't drink no more. The question for them, though, is this. About 2-3 years ago in Flint, Michigan, in the States, they had this issue with water where they moved the water from one source to the other and caused some Legionnaires' disease that killed some people. President Obama at the time put a lot of millions of dollars in the system there to correct that problem. I don't think that had ever been done with it. I would like to ask them if what's happening in Barbados, if there's any possibility at all of we getting to stage where there is Legionnaires in this country, because it's a very serious thing and it's something that can kill you quite easily.
Good morning. Now, Legionnaires' disease, of course, is a very dangerous disease which is correctly identified. However, as it relates to our drinking water, Legionnaires, first of all, we need to go back towards the mode of transmission for Legionnaires' disease. And the mode of transmission for Legionnaires' disease is actually not through ingestion in terms of drinking the water. Legionnaires is an upper respiratory infection. So what would happen is that if you have a water supply system at your premises and it's contaminated with Legionella organism, when you open your tap and the aerosols emerge from that and you inhale them, that is how you basically contract Legionnaires' disease. It's actually an upper respiratory tract infection and it's not a gastrointestinal disease. Well, of course, it's very dangerous.
But before you go...
The mode of transmission...
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you can go ahead.
Because my check is that they had a lot of lead in the drinking water. does not, because this talk about Legionnaire's disease didn't really come up.
No.
It was led in the war.
So the threat for Legionnaire's disease from the Ministry of Health perspective in our drinking water is pretty much non-existent from a drinking water perspective.
In Flint, Michigan, what had happened, they had changed the source of water to a more acidic water, which attacked the old pipes, caused more lead to leach out. And lead is, and you know, we had that in Barbados, the whole thing about people dropping down and the meters for having lead. I don't know if you remember that going on.
I remember that discussion.
But lead is a problem usually in small children that are developing brains. It usually attacks the brain. But what I can say, our meters, as we said before, have no lead in them. We, since the early 1990s, we have removed lead fittings. The only lead fittings that remain is in the older private buildings. But anytime we find even that, although it is on private property, we will remove them or ask the person to remove any lead fittings. Also, because of the hardness of our water, it is less likely to leach lead. So lead is not a problem. And our water is hard, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Okay, thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
A very good morning to you, Mr. Ellis. How are you keeping?
I'm well, and you?
Not too bad. Well, I'd like to make a small submission here this morning. Prior to independence, there was a grassroots culture where politicians, in the true sense of the word, look after the poor and needy. And you recall, sir, that as time progressed, the mighty Calypsonian Griner enlightened us with his vision, with the lyrics of the Calypso, Mr. T. Post-independence of now 51 years plus, citizens has a different political mindset with a different 21st century culture caused by technology. Why I am saying time has changed, sir. Once before, hardware used to refer to a store, not computer. Enter was a sign on a door, not a button on a computer keyboard. And chip was a piece of wood. Fast food was what you ate during lunch. Rock music at one time took place when grandma sung a lullaby in a rocking chair. Mr. Ellister, the chief instructor at George Street and architect of destructive criticism of the Barbados Labour Party, launched last year something called the FACS. Most of the faithfuls could be seen displaying their lily white t-shirt with the word in black and blue print FACS.
Okay, thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello. You're on the air. Somebody just pointed out to me that the estimates are being brought to Parliament, and that implies that the Prime Minister is going right down to the wire with respect to calling elections. Of course, you know that the estimates are about spending money, right? Down to brass tacks. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
And your guest, sir.
Yes, welcome.
Three small points you want to make, if you will, sir, if you'll allow me. First to begin with, I am not going to blame the Americans or the Canadians and so on for their advisories, because I think, as far as I'm concerned, the press corps here in Barbados did a very poor job of not pointing out that the area of concern was on one street, Highway 7, about a mile, and that did not embrace the whole South Coast. Nobody took time to point out that the beaches at Accra, Miami, and Dover were not affected. And when people outside Barbados, you know Barbados, the small town, you see the South Coast, then you may imagine that the whole South Coast, including all the beaches, are affected. It was poor journalism on our part, and they have capitalized on it.
That's possibly true, but you know, the only thing I'll say to you on this, is that the kind of access that you have to brass tacks on a regular basis suggests that you failed in your responsibility as well, because you really should never have allowed something like that to slip.
Mr. Ellis, I just not the first time I mentioned that, but
right. In all fairness, the advisories that were issued were specific as to what parts of the South Coast were impacted. Yes.
Well, I didn't see that, sir.
They were all very specific. No, I don't think that that's fair.
I never heard Highway 7 mentioned. I heard Hastings and something. But that doesn't tell you. That, as a matter of fact, I suggested that we should have had a map of Barbados, a 6-inch or 12-inch square map of Barbados, showing the area, the specific area on the South Coast. And that would give people a more geographic comprehension of the area of
offense. You would concede, though, that we do have a problem nonetheless.
But yeah, we have a problem. Of course, yeah. We do have a problem. And I'm going to put the blame on the Ministry of Health, because they have a chief medical officer, they have a senior medical officer, they have a chief health, public health inspector. And what they should have done, or what could have been done, is that area the water is coming, and they could have fumigated that water, fumigated the area. Some people, I've seen it done before, some people use kerosene oil if you don't want to buy.
I'm a specialist, and I don't think that it would have helped kerosene oil in water like that. But anyhow, somebody from the Ministry of Health is here, a specialist is here to respond to you. Kerosene oil, fumigation?
Well, what I can say is that the Ministry of Health has continued to carry out its mandate, which is to carry out surveillance along the south coast of Barbados and monitor the aspects of the environment which can present.
But he's going beyond. He's going beyond monitoring. He's asking for a specific type of action that would mitigate damage. That's basically.
It would move the smell. It remove the smell. It would stop the mosquitoes from breathing, and it will also kill some of the surface bacteria. This was done in Brazil.
You bring a truck and pour some Clorox on it or something like that, right?
But even that, but just before the Olympics in Brazil, you remember Zika?
You guys, you need to respond to him, because, you know, he sounds very authoritative when he talks. Yeah, you guys need to respond to him about what are the options available when it comes to things like this.
Well, what I can say, in addition to the water quality surveillance, the enhanced water quality surveillance program, there's also an enhanced education program for food businesses as it relates to hygiene and sanitation. And in addition to that, we have also increased fogging in the area as it relates to mosquitoes.
Mr. Allen,
can you put anything in the water? Because that's what he's saying.
But there's nothing for us to put in the water. Right.
On the streets, the control odor and the control some bacteria, we've been using Odorban, which is a chemical recommended for those things. It will control odor and it will kill bacteria.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're not kerosene here.
I'm talking stupidness.
You said not kerosene, though.
But we, up here, we had a flooding problem some time ago where the wells were overflowing and smelling. And some people use kerosene twice a day, and it worked. Some people use antiseptic lotion, fluids.
But it's an important point. It's an important point. The thing is that there are many practices that we indulge in. But we don't even get a chance to discuss the pros and cons of doing something like that. So take the opportunity now to spell out what, you know, is it a safe practice to do that? Are there dangers associated with it? Let me get the specialist to talk about it.
Mr. Ellis,
just
hold on.
Sorry, I mean the other specialist, girl. You're a specialist yourself.
Yeah. Before the Brazil Olympics, the Rio Olympics.
Yeah.
They had a problem with Zika, you remember that? And Zika is spread by a mosquito. And what they did was, what the government did was, they got the public health inspectors, they got people from the army, get them overall masks, and they gave them a fumigation tank. And they had to go right through all the neighborhoods around all the lands around the stadium, and they had to fumigate around the waterways and so on and so forth. And you will remember that despite the fact that some people did not go to the Olympics because they were afraid of being contaminated, all those waterways they had, they were produced the type of mosquitoes or the type of sickness that was...
All right, let me get the response that I have been seeking here about the use of kerosene and things like that. As you said just now, people have been practicing in parts of the island. Okay.
In relation to kerosene, that is a swamp environment, a very interconnected water body. that has a specific global and national significance. It's a Ramsar site. So if you put...
Well, what does that mean, a Ramsar
site? It's a specially protected site for species and so forth.
You're talking about the swamp,
yes.
The Graham Hall Swamp.
Yeah, it's the only one we got also.
Right.
And to put kerosene, you are looking now to destroy, because kerosene will be toxic. You're not only going to destroy mosquito larvae, but you're going to destroy fish, you can destroy birds nesting, and you have birds like the yellow warbler that is in there, there's a very threatened species in Barbados. So kerosene oil would be a no-no to use on a large basis.
And using it further inland is also potentially dangerous, yeah, because the water comes down,
right?
You know? And these are things that people do and they don't stop to think about where it's going to land, you know?
Ms. Ellis,
yes.
The kerosene and the application of kerosene is...
I tell you, he's a specialist.
He's a specialist.
I mean you.
But let me tell you something. The fumigation is at the site where the water is coming through and smelling in the neighborhood. You want to kill the scent, first of all. You want to stop mosquito and have not do the swamp. So I don't know.
Well, you heard the point about that has been made. That even
the
if
water
you,
bodies are interconnected.
If, yes, because if you do it away from the swamp, it can still end up in this swamp. That's the point.
Okay, Mr. Ellis, let me just say this. A lot of water that we import in this country as drinking water, not pure water, yeah, that's straight. And we have had instances where that water has been found to contain high levels of bacteria and has been rejected. But nobody talks about that because everything that comes from outside is supposed to be pure and free. And we know that ain't true. We have meat coming in here that is contaminated with steroids antibiotics. We have vegetables coming in here that's contaminated with chemicals, fertilizers, and so on. And somehow, I don't know if we catch them. When we catch them, we talk about them. When we don't catch them, nobody remembers. But a lot of what we import here is also contaminated. And let me just make this one last point. These small countries are always stepped on by the big countries because of their power and their supposed racial superiority and so on. There is a company in France called Lactalis that exports milk powder to the world, children, to drink, and it has been found to contain salmonella bacteria. Anybody there who reads the paper would know. If you don't read the paper, don't ask them because they know. Salmonella bacteria. And it has been making children sick, but nobody has paid attention to that.
Okay. You can give me a break right now. Let me raise another issue here, because I think it was Mr. Eiffel who spoke about increasing the concentration of chlorine in the water supply. One person writing here says that, and this is proposed as or is used to offset contamination. They're saying that chlorine is a poison. I suppose what they're implying is that used in too high a quantity is dangerous. Are there dangers associated with?
Of course, chlorine is a poison. Up to this morning, the news say that it was is used as a chemical weapon, but those are concentrations way beyond what we would use. We start at 1 part per million at the station, to reach an average of 0.5 parts per million in the system. This is for every million gallons of water, there's effectively 1 gallon of chlorine at the station. By the time it interacts with the water, it is only about half a gallon of chlorine for every million gallons of water. So while you hear about chlorine, this is chlorine gas and so forth that you're talking about. Now, when you're going to, say you have high organic water and you're high chlorinating up to, as one person had in the paper the other day, 200 parts per million, you couldn't drink that. When we get to 0.7 and so forth, people call and complain that they can taste the, in Bayesian terms, the EC in the water, right? So the kind of levels that we use doesn't make it a danger.
Just let me add here that we have run in from at least 2010 a white screen program where we go in and we sample at source six of the public supply wells annually, twice. The idea is to sample all of them. And we do an analysis there for in excess of 125 different parameters. And these include the trihalomethanes.
The what?
Trihalomethanes. These are byproducts of chlorination, particularly in the presence of high concentration of organic matter. But we have groundwater wells which don't have high organic matter. So we don't have to chlorinate that high, and we don't have the organic matter. When we do trihalomethane formation potential, it is used to be lower any limit that you can find. So this is not of any concern.
We also do a variety of pesticides, heavy metals, etc. And in all cases, the results are actually below the laboratory detection limit.
But right. Some time ago, there was a lot of concern about nitrates in water.
There is still a concern for nitrates, but we haven't seen the water quality breaching the WHO standards.
Right. What's that standard?
That standard is 10 milligrams per
liter. And how close do we get?
Depending upon where you are, there are some locations where we are 8 milligrams per liter.
Not too far, therefore.
But the important point is the management systems that we have in place, so the land use management plan in terms of the zoning policy, and effectively regulating that zoning policy combined with our sampling, as well as the response that we have in place if we do identify anything or certain levels of anything rise, we would usually make recommendations to respond.
So this problem with the nitrate levels is traced more to farming than to domestic behavior?
It's a combination of both.
Because I remember the discussion that we had about the Bell Area some years ago, and truth be told, that is a matter that seems to have gone underground, like the water itself. But I mean, to what extent is that a matter that we should still be paying attention to? Or have you been able to come up with mitigating mechanisms that, you know,
We are still paying attention to it, and particularly in conjunction with the town country planning. We don't allow any new connections, any new development in the area. We don't give water to any new developments in the area. And as I said, we monitor nitrates on Bell on a weekly basis rather than on a monthly basis to make sure. And one of the options we have when it comes to areas like the Bell is that we can then blend waters if it's too high. We got the possibility of blending waters, but the idea is to prevention is better than cure, is to keep the number of residents out there from increasing, and therefore increasing the load of nitrates going in the ground from domestic users, from domestic residences.
This is down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks, hello?
Good morning, David.
Yes, good morning.
See you on the panel. The first question I want to ask you is, have you heard the advisory that the Germans brought out?
I saw it, yes.
Right. Can you inform us as to what it was? Is it
It was narrowed down to specifically, I think, St. Lawrence Gap and one other area. It's a general advisory saying, look, there's been raw sewage on the streets, and they also indicated that there's been some contamination of the seawater. That's what they suggested. And that there was a need for travelers to be cautious. That's what I saw.
Okay. Now, that statement to me brings up several issues. Because we not only have the U.S. saying something, so therefore the chances that said that the U.S. were mistaken or misleading in what they said would be higher. But now we also have the Germans saying something. And as you said, that speaks specifically to the seawater out there in the bathing. Now, I respect the fact that we are trying our hardest not to do damage or further damage to Barbados's reputation. And as far as possible, people are trying to protect that. But to be totally honest, what I'm hearing this morning is not inspiring confidence in me.
Well, I can be more specific on what the Germans said. The translation of their advisory is that between Hastings and St. Lawrence Gap, there's currently a problem due to heavy flooding from untreated sewage, and travelers are being advised to avoid this area, especially the beaches, and follow the instructions of the local authorities. That's what they said.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is that what I'm hearing this morning, to me, is not inspiring the confidence in me that I believe that we should have.
What do you want to hear?
Okay? No, there are too many things that I am not hearing.
Like what?
For example, when the gentleman called and he asked the question as to the statement which was made earlier, which was that the bacteria could be coming from the storage. Okay, the answer that the gentleman that they had spoken of earlier, saying how the contaminants or whatever could be coming because of the storage or whatever, but they have not had access to the various properties yet in order to, they've requested access. That sounds so stupid to me.
Why?
Because to me, what do you need access? Why do you just ask them to send you samples? Have y'all requested? But okay, y'all took these samples. Can you please send us those samples so we can verify what you've said?
You need to expand on, the panelists, you need to expand on why it is important to actually gain entry to the property to see what is happening, as distinct from what he's suggesting. Let him send you samples. Anthony Headley.
Thanks. It's important for us to understand the situation, where the samples are being taken, as well as to do tests on the water before the property. We need to be able to distinguish exactly if contamination is actually occurring, as well as look to see how and what type of management systems are in place on the property. In our experience,
just a second, hold on. So therefore, you know what you're saying as well. You have just said that it's important if you do tests before it enters the property. So therefore, if before it enters the property, that is your property. So therefore, you can't tell me then that you need to have access to get on their property to do a test there for that.
And we've made arrangements.
Because you have access to the water going on to the property, and you can test that before it goes on to the property.
We've made arrangements for that to be done, sir.
Pardon me?
We've made arrangements for that to be done.
No,
but we have to do the two of them. If you could just wait a minute, please, sir.
No, caller, just let the gentleman speak first, and you have an ample opportunity to respond.
If you're going to analyze this thing in a scientific, defendable manner, you need to take both samples on the same day, approximately at the same time. You can't take one sample at the entrance and then 2 days later take another sample on the inside of the property. It doesn't make scientific sense. If we're going to do something and we want to do it correctly and to ensure that the results that we generate are defendable. So we are not going to compromise our integrity and the protocols that actually exist for this. So that is the process that will be used.
Okay.
Can I speak to that now, please?
Yes.
Because don't tell me that you can't take a sample today to do testing on that sample, to then say, okay, this is what we have found in this particular sample today, says XYZ. And then tomorrow, take another sample. And then if you want to say it tomorrow as well, you take the other sample inside and now you're talking about their results. That's a different thing. What we are dealing with is the safety of the water in Barbados. And as I said, in terms of PR...
But I don't think that you have answered what he just said.
But just a second, hold on. In terms of the PR exercise for Barbados, the whole of Barbados is... the American warning and saying that they took the samples at five different locations or whatever. There has been no response from the government of Barbados, from the water authority or what have you, to say, listen, the five locations which have been identified are the ones on the South Coast. That's the first thing. So therefore, we can localize the problem and say, this is on happening on the South Coast. There are assumptions being made, okay, which say that, from what I've heard, is that, oh, well, everybody is believing that they're talking about South Coast locations. But that has not been said. That's the first thing. So there are too many things which are not, I'm not hearing.
Okay, let me get a response to that last point which you've read.
What I would say is, okay, the specific example, the specific house, that was not done. But I can tell you, between June and the beginning of December, there was a total of about 30 samples taken in that area the general areas identified for chlorine residual, which had an average chlorine residual of 0.29 parts per million, which is within limit. And there was no positive count for total coliform. Those are in those areas.
We're not talking about, I'm not asking about coliform. I have not asked you any of those questions about the specific things that you have been testing for. I'm not asking you about the methodologies you're using to test. What I am saying is that if you want to say that if the first, we have a public relations problem, that's the first thing. And I'm saying that if the public relations says that 90 comes out and first says 95% of the water in Barbados, of the locations that have been tested, all of Barbados show no contamination, no elevated bacteria levels or whatever, fine. You come out and you say that. And then you say, we have a problem on the South Coast. You recognize that.
But that is what I just said, that we did 30 samples in the areas identified and the chlorine residual was appropriate and there were no bacteria found at elevated levels. There was zero bacteria found.
All right. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. We're approaching the time for the regional roundup, which comes 5 minutes before noon. So we have time for, let's take one more call. Yes, ma'am.
I know. Good morning to you all there. Now, what I would like to ask the gentleman there, anyone can answer.
There's a lady here too, here?
Oh, sorry, I didn't know. I just joined very late.
Yes.
Good morning to you, ma'am. What I would like to ask, why is water so hard? I use Persilite Tide, and then I use the softener, but yet the clothes still, when they dry, they got this hardness to them. Why?
Barbados is a coral limestone country. We use groundwater, so you will get that the hardness, the natural hardness of the water that comes out. And by the way, it does not contribute to gallstones or anything like that. So that is the nature of Barbados water. Because it's a coral limestone supply, you'll get that in it. You can't do anything about that.
I wonder if Gail Trotman can tell me whether it varies depending upon the quality of the material that you're washing. It doesn't matter?
No. The water is hard because it's coming from a limestone.
And some material, no material responds better or worse to it?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Vinnie, I hope that satisfies you. And you got a short one today, so if you need to call us back, you can do that, okay? All right, we're going to the regional roundup, and then we're going to come back to continue this edition of Down to Brass Tacks right here on Voice of Barbados.